What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to Fan Culture episode 22 now. We missed y'all last week, but we are back at it again. We got a lot of good stuff to get into. You got Sid here, we got Carl, we got Sakani. How y'all doing?
I'm good.
Doing well.
I'm doing well, man. That one week.
How about you?
I'm straight. I'm doing good. But yeah, no, we're good. We missed some stuff last week, so we got a few things to touch on, but we're not gonna try to go too far back into the past either. Obviously the whole situation with AB has just been crazy. We've also gonna talk some US Open action. You know, we had legends playing on the court and just a lot of storylines, so we can react to that as well. Week one of the NFL season was interesting to say the least, depending on who your team is. So we'll react to that. The FIBA national team, you know, Team USA basketball has just been a disgrace. We'll break that down and get some reactions from everyone here. But first things first, let's go back to this Antonio Brown situation. So the timeline for AB is honestly too long, and I think for us to go down the timeline would take up the whole episode of the podcast. So let's just go back to the most recent things, I guess, that happened. AB forced his way out of Oakland. Yeah, he forced his way out of Oakland. Basically, you know, through tantrums here and there, the Raiders found a way, I don't know how, to get out of basically that guaranteed money. And, you know, AB caught wind of that he was missing out on his guarantees and was like, nah, just release me then. So ends up, and I mean, you saw the memes coming out before it happened. Everyone knew that, you know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots just waiting in the cut. Right. And to everyone's expectation, it actually happened. And then people tried to be like, fake shocked, like y'all were just posting memes about it, but now all of a sudden y'all surprised because it actually happened. You got AB joining the Patriots, Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, you know, Josh Gordon, who looked good in week one as well. What's your takeaway from just this whole AB thing? I know he has the sexual assault thing, that civil suit. We won't touch on that too much just because the facts haven't really come out yet, very, very early. But what's your whole reaction to this AB saga, this AB summer?
All right. Honestly, I just felt like it was too much of a coincidence that so many problems were going on with the same person all at this one time. I do believe that it was kind of planned. I don't know why. I don't know. I honestly have no idea why Antonio Brown would not want to be in Oakland, why he would not want to be an Oakland Raider, why he would not want to be a Raider knowing that they're moving to Las Vegas and be a part of that. Huge transition. I honestly don't know. You know, maybe he feels like the team just isn't great enough to compete and he just wanted to be on a better team right away. Maybe he just doesn't trust Derek Carr. I don't know if he has anything against John Gruden. I don't know what's going on, but it was just too much. There's no way you can convince me that you're not familiar with what type of shoes to wear, right, to where you get frostbite on your toes, your feet, or wherever it was exactly. The whole helmet situation was just too confusing. You know, too many statements about, I don't need football, I don't have to play football, I'm fine, for you to find so many ways to try to play football the way you want to play it. If you don't want to play it, just don't play it. And if you want to play it, understand that you need to wear a certain type of helmet and just leave it alone. You know, it was just too much for me. And then, you know, you get into it with the GM, whatever you said is whatever you said, whatever happened, happened. Now, the money thing, that I can understand, you know, from what I've read, what I've heard, you know, he just didn't appreciate the fact that he apologized like he was asked to do, and he was still fined, which voided the guaranteed $29.1 million of his contract. I get it, but you said what you said.
Right. You called the GM a cracker the day before you apologized to the team.
Exactly. And,
right. Yeah. So, I mean, and I was a little shocked by the Patriots move. The Patriots were the first team that came to mind, but at the same time, I just didn't know if Belichick really wanted to deal with that type of a headache. Like, if you think about Antonio
Brown. I remember
we
were texting about that.
Yeah, like, you think about Antonio Brown, like, everything that he went through this summer in Oakland. Would he have done that in New England? Would Belichick have allowed for all of that to happen? I don't know if he, or I didn't know at that time if that's something he really just felt like dealing with. So I was a little surprised, although honestly, they were the first team that came to my mind. I thought maybe if not them, it'll be somebody who's just completely desperate, like a Miami. We just got to do something. Let's just whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, he gets the deal, 1 year, $15 million, almost $10 million guaranteed. It's not looking bad for him if you just look at that. You know, you went from Oakland, who nobody expected anything from, especially prior to you getting traded over there, to now you're on a team that probably just widened the gap that they already had from the rest of the league. And, you know, you were guaranteed $29 million over the course of 3 years. Now you're guaranteed basically 10 for 1 year. And if you ball out, there's no telling what you might be able to get after this. So you might mess around and end up with more money than you were contractually supposed to get.
They added the $20 million team option basically for next season. So Patriots could choose to pick that up. So do the math. $30 million right there in 2 years as opposed to three.
Right. And I'm going to say exactly what I said in a text. I feel like this can either go really bad, like the Oakland experience did, or it can go really good and possibly mirror what we saw the last time Tom Brady had an elite wide receiver, which was Randy Moss. It was a record-breaking season. You win every single game that year. Tom Brady threw, 50, 51 touchdowns. Yeah. I think he had about 23 to Randy Moss alone. So you can possibly see something similar to that. I know that they are different wide receivers. I know that Randy Moss is much faster than Antonio Brown. And, you know, he's taller, so he's much more of a deep threat. But still, you can put up astronomical numbers with that arm and that receiver when you look at what he was able to do with Big Ben, who's been breaking down for I don't know how long, but still been able to sustain, you know, a career over these last couple of years as well. But that's just my initial thoughts of everything that's been going on.
Wow. Well, I feel like when I first heard about the switch, I felt like Carl had somehow foreshadowed it. I didn't think New England was going to make that move for that same reason. It just didn't seem like the type of publicity that Bill Belichick and the Patriots organization would want around their system. I remember when Tebow had gone there, I felt like the reason why he didn't make the team, obviously, there were issues with his form and technique, but I think the publicity and the news that happened when he gone up there was just too much for the organization to handle. So I wouldn't think that they would then again enter that. But you got to think when there is an elite talent like AB, you kind of want to, knowing that your quarterback, maybe Tom said he wants to play till he's 45. If you only have him for four more years, you want to have a talent like AB there to be able to make sure you get the most out of those 4 years. I'm sure there were other teams who were also interested in AB, but I think the hype around just it being, as you said, Sid, an AB summer, I feel like it was a deterrent for most teams. But when you look at the bigger picture, it's like, who wouldn't want to have AB on their team, knowing the numbers that he can put up, the fact that he's consistently been the top three receiver in the league? Yeah, I understand why the Patriots went for him. And I would have liked to have seen what other teams were interested, what other teams, you know, had made offers, if any other teams did. But yeah, that's how I felt about the move that happened. Also, the charge that has been issued against him has also, I heard, been news to the Patriots because they didn't know that prior to him being traded. So you also wonder, would they have picked him up prior to knowing that, or did they actually know and they didn't care? You know,
right.
It's a lot to take in, but I think the Patriots are AFC champs. I mean, there's no reason for me to think that they're not at this point. But yeah, I think it was also a great move for AB. I mean, if there's any team that you go to that Patriots would hate for you to be at, I mean, not the Patriots, the Steelers would hate for you to be.
Yeah,
it would be the Patriots. And so I think, once again, it's just a way for him to get back at the Steelers.
I mean, the Steelers are honestly lucky that he wasn't able to play week one. That was the only thing I was kind of looking forward to, because I knew they were playing week one, and then, mm-hmm. you know, he got signed there. So I'm like, he is so petty. But, you know, it didn't turn out that way. He wasn't eligible to play week one.
Right. That would have been even worse. Oh, it was already bad.
Right. Oh, yeah. He would have wanted to play the whole game, even if they were up 42-0.
Put me on defense.
Right. So he could pick off Big Ben. Man. And, you know, he'd probably kick him in the face mask like he did that punter when he was on punt return. But, yeah, just my reaction to the whole thing. And I'll try to – I kind of echo a lot of the things that you guys have said already, so I'm trying not to really repeat it. But the whole thing, I don't know if necessarily it was all planned, because there were things that he did to hurt his value that you can't guarantee is going to get you A, out of Oakland, and B, to New England and have New England be interested.
Or by any team at that.
Right, or by any team. Yeah, the damage that you did to your feet, I ain't doing that on purpose to get out of Oakland.
No, I feel
right, that had nothing to do with the Raiders. The helmet thing was a vendetta against the NFL, nothing to do with the Raiders. There wasn't really much that the Raiders, at least on the surface from what we see, that the Raiders did until it got to the fines, where it's like, now he feels personally attacked because it's like, I'm the victim here. You know, I'm just trying to come here and play football and y'all won't let me play football. And, you know, how AB does. So I think it did eventually get to the point where it's like, nah, bro, I got to be out. Like, they took my money. That's all I came here for. So I'm out. It had nothing to do with winning, because who would want to go to the Raiders? I mean, let's be real. Randy Moss learned that quick. So it is a good move for him to go to New England for football reasons. I don't think that he necessarily cares about the championship part of it too much, because let's say if the Patriots would offer him, I don't know, $3 million guaranteed and would have been a highly incentivized contract, he'd rather go to Philadelphia or Miami if there was $12 million guaranteed. You know what I mean? Like, he's just going to go where the money is. I don't get how people are like, man, AB's a genius. Like, look at all this. And he ended up on the Patriots and he's still going to get $30 million and all this stuff. That $20 million on the back end isn't guaranteed.
Not at all.
And I honestly, it wouldn't surprise me to see the Patriots not decline his option. It wouldn't surprise me if they picked up his option for next year and then trade him.
No, not at all. Not knowing Bill.
They had Brandon Cooks there for what, 1 year? Flipped him for a first round pick after trading a first round pick to get him from New Orleans.
Right.
So they're gonna find a way to get value out of it. It's not just gonna be AB, okay, come in here, take our money, you know, F up our couch and all this stuff and then just dip. Like, nah, we're gonna get what we wanna get out of it. So they don't really lose in many situations, especially with high profile names. So I don't think it's necessarily going to turn out the way. 2 years from now, I think we're going to be looking back like, man, AB, yeah, he may have got a chip out of it. But, A, I feel like we got to give him, like, the Kevin Durant treatment. We went hard at Kevin Durant when he went to the Warriors. This is virtually the same thing.
How so? Because
when you look at the Patriots, you think about their quarterback, you think about their coach, and that's pretty much it.
Well, yeah, they have the best coach, the best system. Regardless of their talent, you always know they're going to be one of the top two teams in the AFC.
And then we also don't know if he had any other options. Kind of like what Sakani said, we don't know what other contracts, what other offers were out there. I would assume there was at least one. Kevin Durant had suitors.
His agent said that there was robust interest. He didn't ever name teams or anything. Yeah. But he did say there was a lot of interest. Maybe the KD comparison is too far, but still, defending champions. There was a little different because not defending champions for Golden State, but they might as well have been.
Right. And then, you know, with that, you know, it's just, you know, you got five people on the court. You're a little more control of the game as an individual basketball player, especially one as good as Kevin Durant. You play both sides of the field or both sides of the court, offense and defense. You know, so I mean,
they weren't building a super team, they're building a super offense. And in today's game, a super offense is basically a super team. Look at Kansas City. Kansas City had a trash.
I feel like that's
defense.
What he had. Yeah, that's what he had in Pittsburgh. Essentially, they just needed a better quarterback. I feel, one who was a bit more consistent.
Yeah, I mean,
like health wise.
I mean, at one point in time, you could not even argue it. Pretty like evident that they had the best wide receiver and running back in the NFL.
Yeah, but imagine if they would have kept the triple B's, and you have Juju.
That would have been.
Yeah, but
what you doing?
Shout out Steelers fans. This is gonna be a 30 for 30 one day. Y'all had a Super Bowl contender and then just nothing. You know, nothing.
Somehow.
Yeah, wild.
Tom Brady.
Yeah, wild how that goes. I kind of get the sense that we all kind of agree that the Patriots are probably going to get a chip this year.
I mean, nothing in life is guaranteed.
I don't know.
Because you probably would have thought that when they had Randy Moss.
True. Where's Plaxico?
Exactly.
Where's David Tyree at?
Hey, man. Shining their ring, looking at
it'll be Odell this time.
Hey, you know what? I guess
Odell.
While Eli Manning's in the league, I guess anything's possible. So we gotta wait till Eli retires. No, Eli.
Eli is getting. He's one of the only people New York has been loyal to, as far as New York teams.
Which is wild,
and you know, only because you brought up Eli, I want to ask this question really quickly, because I did ask it to one of my friends who's a Dallas Cowboy fan. When you look at the way Dak Prescott just replaced Tony Romo, and then you also look at the way that the New York Giants are so loyal to Eli Manning, excluding the two championships, did Tony Romo deserve to play out his career in Dallas the way New York is allowing Eli, or did they make the right move by replacing him when they did?
See, I think it depends on what angle you're looking at it from. If you're looking at it from a business move and wanting to make sure that you can always put fans in the seats, then yes, they made the right move.
Was Tony talking Romo about not loyalty? An attraction, though?
I think after three and a half quarters. For like 3.5 quarters, Tony Romo was the real deal. Last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Actually, that's a terrible stat, because that's actually not true. He's one of the best fourth quarter quarterbacks, actually.
Based on QBR?
No, based on wins.
Based on wins. Okay, but let's back this up, though.
Look
because,
that up.
Because we've talked about this before. Remember we talked about game-winning drives?
Yeah.
Matthew Stafford was tied for the league lead in come-from-behind wins, you know, 2 years ago. That doesn't really speak to who Matthew Stafford is as a quarterback. So don't let them stats be deceiving.
Just like
how they talked about.
You brought up the fourth quarter, so that's the only reason why I said that.
Well, yeah, because we got to see with our eyes so many game-breaking fumbles and interceptions. You know what I mean? It's like it directly, you know, reflected in a win and loss for that game. Even if he balled out, just like he did against the Broncos that 1 year, he threw for like 500 yards. But he threw that pick in overtime. They lost the game.
You know, he brought that up, the guy I was talking to. Shout out to Terrell, a.k.a. Bees, because he was talking about that. Like, you know, the defense for the Cowboys were playing terrible.
Yeah,
they allowed a lot of points. I think he said that the record was broken for the most amount of first downs. Like, they allowed Denver to get like 41 first downs, and the record prior to that game was like 32. And the only, I mean, he threw the interception, but they were driving, and then he stepped on his lineman's like foot or leg or something, and
threw
it just
straight to Daniel Trevathan.
Right, you know, threw him off. So, you know,
I think, and to go and to answer your question, I think that the Cowboys did make the right decision. It was one of those things. Okay, you got a rookie quarterback, you know, fourth round pick.
Balling his ass off.
Right, exactly. That was, and mind you, this is after we saw what, you know, Colin Kaepernick did, you know, with the Niners. You know, so you kind of make that comparison. You had a veteran, very good quarterback.
I thought they jumped the gun on that as well.
Yeah, because I was going to say play it safe and bring Alex Smith back when he's healthy.
This is my bad. Like,
they made the right decision, I think.
If you're on the team and you're my starting quarterback, I feel like you should be my starting quarterback until you no longer deserve to be my starting quarterback. And my backup quarterback playing well, just for me personally, that's not a good enough reason, because you're doing what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to come in and fill the void that's left after my starter, you know, can't play. Yeah. You know, if he's playing bad and I feel like, all right, we need to change up the offense, let's shake things up and go a young dude, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But when you say, okay, he's hurt and he can't play, So now you have to come in and play, and you're doing your job. You're executing. You're throwing touchdowns. You're running for touchdowns.
But that's the thing. You're not playing. And what you're supposed to be doing is also playing.
What do you mean?
That's what we're paying you for. Like, as a team owner, it's like,
well, that's what
you're not doing your job because I'm paying. But I'm paying you to play.
You're paying me my guaranteed money to be on the team. And some of that money, especially for Tony Romo, you paid me for what I've done for you in the past. Like that portion that you're paying me for to play, that's the non-guaranteed money that I have to earn by throwing a certain amount of yards, certain amount of touchdowns, making a Pro Bowl, getting us to the playoffs, getting a playoff win, Super Bowl appearance. That's really what you paying me for to play. Everything else is, oh, well, you show up for a workout, you guaranteed $500,000. You pass your physical, you guaranteed $1 million. I did all of that. And then this is a sport. Like, you know that injuries are a part of the game. That's kind of like how people tell a celebrity, you shouldn't be upset at fans asking for photos, asking for your autograph, because that's what you signed up for. You knew that when you decided to own a football team, that your franchise quarterback, running back, linebacker, kicker, whatever, could possibly get hurt while playing this physical sport. So, I mean, I can't be
but when
mad
that's
at
your
Tony
MO,
Romo for being
no, you can't.
Hurt
trust
at
me,
that
I
time.
Love and I love Romo. Like Romo, I as much as people hated him, as much as Cowboys fans hated him, I never hated him. I was like, he's consistently good. He just can't stay healthy. And whenever, like, comes down to the wire, it never works out in his favor. That's how I always felt. But at the same time, bro, you couldn't stay healthy. Last few years of your career, you had a back surgery, 4 back surgeries, yeah. Broken multiple broken collarbones. Like, you just couldn't stay healthy anymore. And when we have a young rookie who's balling his ass off and we don't have to worry about paying him and we have the opportunity to let go of your contract, I'm sorry, I'm going to do that.
Right. But, I mean, didn't you still have to pay him for a certain period of time? I don't feel like, oh, he's just completely off the books because Dak is now our starting quarterback. Like, you still got to pay him what you owe him.
Yeah, I think for them it was just worth cutting their losses.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just kind of like, like I'm saying, I just feel like he deserved. And this is the thing, this is coming from somebody. I really don't care about Tony Romo or the Cowboys, but I'm just saying, like, just on the
loyalty
situation. Yeah, I just feel like, you know, he probably should have been able to play that out.
Yeah.
Until either I can't.
Right.
Like, I literally can't play, or I just can't do it good anymore.
Yeah. I think the Cowboys just got lucky because they were in a situation, you know, unlike the Giants where they were forced to play Dak because Tony Romo wasn't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the Giants, this is the first time that they may have had a legitimate quarterback behind Eli Manning. You know, they could have drafted Sam Darnold last year, which they didn't, and they probably should have. Although, don't get me wrong, I love Saquon. Saquon's awesome, but they needed a quarterback. They had, Geno Smith? They had Davis Webb behind Eli. You weren't going to move the franchise forward with them, and everyone knew that. But now they're bringing Daniel Jones.
They definitely didn't put in an effort.
Right, yeah, they put in zero effort. But now, if Eli plays a whole season, yo, GM got to go, head coach got to go. That ain't it. Like, if I'm the owner, Daniel Jones has to play. Like, we spent the number 6 overall pick on him. Like, we got to move forward with this kid.
But why do you have to play him this year?
But what? Do we have to rush him?
You don't have to
rush
him.
That's another thing I feel like they're doing. Like, I feel like that's really
start?
That's happening a lot.
Jared Goff. Not immediately.
Yeah. I don't think you have to start him immediately, but I'm saying we know the Giants aren't a good team. So if the Giants aren't a good team, I'm not
gonna, I mean, they played the Cowboys though, so I mean, what'd you expect?
I mean, that's another part of it. Like, how can I judge the Cowboys when they played the Giants?
Honestly, I kinda thought the Cowboys were gonna play down the competition. It'd be one of those regular, like, 23-20 like games. For some reason, like, the Cowboys squeak it out. Like, it didn't surprise me if that was gonna happen.
And it because you know you aren't good.
Yeah.
Should you do, like, I feel bad for
y'all
Kyler
haters.
Murray.
It's all good.
I feel bad for Murray.
Oh yeah, Kyler doesn't have an offensive line at all.
I would hate to subject.
He has weapons on the outside though.
I would hate to subject the young quarterback to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like that Aaron Rodgers set for 3 years.
Yeah.
But I like sitting behind somebody, learning from somebody. It's a completely different thing from college, and everybody don't just come in like that.
Yeah, but I think. the reason I say he's got to play at some point, he doesn't need to play by week six or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't mind if you play him last four games of the season. The reason being is because, okay, yes, I'm learning behind Eli for 12 games, directly behind him, watching him do everything he does. Last four games, put me in, let me take my own lumps, let Eli, you know, tell me, hey, you should have done that, you should have done that. So now I'm going into the offseason where I'm going to be the starter. I actually have some game film that I can learn from and apply towards that offseason and then come back next training camp strong.
I think if anything, when you have one of these situations where you got a veteran quarterback, bad team, young quarterback who's pretty much going to be his successor, you just put him in when you know the game is over. Mm-hmm. You down by 30, it's 9 minutes in the fourth quarter. All right, just let Daniel run it.
Mm-hmm.
Just let him take over the offense and all right.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't want to damage him either and have him play a full season.
Right, so you get your game experience, but you get your game experience when there's no pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That way we can really see. Because if you go out there and we already down by 30 and it's 7-8 minutes left.
I expect you to come back.
And you throw three interceptions in that time period. Like, you go on offense three times, you throw a pick each time. Like, all right, I don't know about this one.
Yeah. Yeah, then they think you're Nathan Peterman reincarnated. Yeah.
He don't need to be on the team right now.
He doesn't. But
he should work at a Walmart. He should be a male librarian. I've never seen one, but he would be a perfect one.
I don't know if he would be, though.
He can't toss a book to nobody.
Right, exactly. Pick six. Pick six Pete.
All right.
So we'll segue, since we've already been talking NFL. Let's go to week one in general. First off, week one, fantasy football. Did y'all win y'all matchups?
No.
No? Sakani, did you win week one?
I did win week one.
I beat Brandon. I snuck that win out, though, because I have some terrible appearances.
Well, I will say my team is trash.
First off, I want to say I messed up because I jumped in a draft about an hour late. So my first six people were automatically selected.
Mm-hmm.
My second pick.
Was your second? Who's your tight end?
I want to say he's with like the Niners.
Oh, George Kittle is good.
I didn't say he was bad. George Kittle's the truth. I didn't say he was bad, but I wouldn't have taken him in the second round.
Oh, then he would have been mine, man.
Cool. You good. No, because there were like some really good players that were available in the second round
at that level.
So my first pick was Nick Chubb, and I only got like 10 points from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, George Kittle, I think I got like 9. And I messed up because Ross. Bengals.
John Ross.
33 points.
Yeah, he balled out.
And I had him sitting on the bench because I don't know why, I just really didn't pay attention. I was just doing everything.
And then it probably didn't realize at the time, hey, AJ Green's hurt. You know,
right.
So you're talking
Tyler
Boyd, John Ross.
Yeah. If I would have put John Ross in, I would have won. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I lost.
Yeah, man. Hard knock life. Well, I beat Brandon head to head. I'm trying to
like the Cowboys and the Giants. You can't brag on that.
I mean, I know Brandon was, you know, on the message boards like, yo, why y'all let me do this? You know, all this stuff. Like, he still almost beat me, though, because Big Ben had a terrible game.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple other people that had some terrible games. Eric Ebron did nothing for me. I had Hollywood Brown on the bench because I thought he wasn't going to do nothing. And here he goes, 2 touchdowns, 150 plus yards, whatever. But Emmanuel Sanders in Monday Night Football was terrible and then showed up in the fourth quarter, which put me over the top. So I ended up winning off of that.
Nice.
But yeah, on to real week one action. What were some of your guys'
Can I say my week? Can I say mine since y'all did?
Yeah, back to you. Yeah, No, that's my bad. I overlooked you. So yeah, let's talk about
It's all good.
No, let's talk about your week one. Let's talk about it. To this day.
I had Drew Brees starting against Houston. Mm-hmm. He was able to lead the drive at the end of the game, which got me my dub. I had Julio Jones. He did all right. He had 6 receptions, but only for 31 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a receiving touchdown, so that got me 12. I had Josh Gordon. He gave me 14. Dalvin Cook, thankfully, balled out.
Yeah.
25 points from him.
He definitely
Sony Michel, I thought he was going to be better. He had 15 rushing attempts for 14 yards. So I got nothing from him. Jared Cook gave me 5 points, which wasn't anything, and the rest of my guys did nothing.
I put Antonio Brown on the trading block, and you made an offer, and I was not happy with your offer. I thought that was like the biggest lowball of all time. This man tried to.
You really got Antonio Brown? Wait, did you trade him already?
No, he's still on my team.
No,
I have another pending offer though. Well, I made an offer, but I'm waiting for the person to respond.
Oh dang!
But I'm like, you can't see who it is, but yeah, he's on the block. So if you want him, send me an offer. But
I'm trying to figure out how do I get to the block.
There's not a true block. Just go to the message board, and that's where I just said he's on the trading block. There, I wish there was an actual physical like thing though. It's yeah.
Yeah, you can just offer, make a trade offer.
Yeah, but let's talk about Sakani's trash offer that he made for Antonio Brown. This man gonna say, okay, trade Antonio Brown for Josh Gordon straight up. After he had already joined the Patriots. You want to take the number one receiver and you give me the 2/3 receiver on the same team? Straight up.
I mean,
it was really a joke.
Yeah, it was the most disrespectful. That's why I sent you a counter. Like, okay, well, give me this. But then I think I canceled it.
Wait, I didn't see the counter.
Yeah, I ended up canceling.
Okay.
I only give you like 3 days for trades and then I move on.
I didn't even see it. How would I have seen the counter?
You go to your roster and then it says like pending transactions. You click it and it'll show you the trade that I proposed to you. So yeah, if y'all interested in AB and y'all got some real offers, hit me up. All right, for sure. But yeah, just real quick, before we move on from fantasy football, shout out my boys Kenny, Gene, brother-in-law Ronnie, Sean, Go Oaks, Menlo College. Just shout out to those guys for joining the league as well. It's fun so far. We got some real competition going on. But yeah, back to real week one action. What were your guys' biggest takeaways from week one of the regular season?
My Rams look like I thought they would look, which is not as good as I would like for them.
You were sleeping on them a little bit. You tempered your expectations.
I'm not sleeping on him. I'm just being realistic. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff still bothers me. This is your fourth year, and you still stare down your target from the snap. Mm-hmm. He shocked me a little bit because I thought with Cooper Kupp returning, that's who he would target more.
His security.
But it looked like he was like he's really trying to force a rapport with Robert Woods, and Robert Woods is a very, very, very good receiver. But you have Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, and Cooper Kupp, not to mention two very reliable wide receivers in Higbee and Everett.
The tight ends, yeah.
Right, and there were two very big plays. Both of them, Jared Goff was rolling out, and I don't know why. Well, I'm sorry. One of them, he was rolling to the right, and Cooper Kupp was just he was just trailing kind of across field, like slanting across the middle or dragging. He was dragging across the middle, mm-hmm. and he was just right there. And instead of throwing it to him, he just tried to force it to Robert Woods, and it was incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just staring at him the whole time like he was wide open. Why would you do that? And the announcer said that, like, I have no idea why he didn't throw it to Kupp. And then there was another play, Robert Woods. He's running like a – it was deep. It was like a 10, 15-yard in.
Mm-hmm.
And – Cooper Kupp ran like a skinny post, and instead of hitting Cooper Kupp on the post where he had the safety beat because of safety, he started dropping down like he was going to try to cut Robert Woods off on that end.
Yeah.
He was going to jump on that. He just tried to throw it in to Robert Woods, but he threw it like to Robert Woods instead of in front of him. Mm-hmm. So the corner was able to get his hand on it and knock it down. And once again, it was like, I really don't know what he doing. Like, he had Kupp, like, right there for the touchdown. I don't know what's going on. All I know is when they showed the replay from the snap, he stared Robert Woods down the entire play. And I hate that he still does that. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were not too many shockers for me. I didn't really feel like there was anybody that just looked, you know what, I'm sorry. Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson was a shocker.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't see scores like that every week.
Yeah.
So
that was my biggest takeaway. Lamar Jackson, that offensive coordinator, that head coach, I don't know if they'll be able to do that week in, week out for the next 16 weeks, but they look like they got something nice over there.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't think the Patriots would win that first game, but I didn't realize how terrible the Steelers would look. Like, yeah. I knew they'd lost their two primary offensive weapons, but, I mean, I didn't think they would look that bad. I was shocked by Dak Prescott, I will say that. And that's as a Cowboys fan. His first three seasons, I still wasn't sure about him. Because mm-hmm. It always seemed like, I don't know if he can really do it without Zeke having a major impact on the game. But he balled out. This was one of his, I think, highest passing yard game of his career. Like,
yeah, it was his second 400-yard game, yeah, in it for his career.
Okay, second. Exactly. And then four touchdown passes, which tied the most he's ever done in a game. He'd only done that once before in three seasons. So him coming out and things flowing so smoothly, I think he only threw three incomplete passes the whole game. Mm. So they were gelling in a way that made me feel confident. But once again, I mean, the Giants' defense isn't stellar.
Yeah.
But just seeing, like, he'd never done that against the Giants previously. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason why I felt like, okay, maybe there's some progress being made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If
Lamar Jackson did ball out.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
And also, the Browns
getting blown out.
They looked worse than what I thought they would look.
Oh yeah, much, much worse. I don't think anyone thought that their defense wasn't gonna play very well, nor would Baker play well. The whole team just crumbled in the fourth quarter because they were only down 9, and then the Titans put up 21 points in the fourth.
Yeah. That upset me a little bit because Baker Mayfield was my starting quarterback for week one. I have Baker Mayfield, I have Derek Carr, because I expected Antonio Brown to be there, and whatever Antonio Brown does is going to be a reflection of Derek Carr. I know he has other people to throw it to, so whatever. But I thought, okay, when he has a big game, it's going to look good on Derek Carr. So I drafted him as well, and then I also have Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. Between the three, I felt like Baker Mayfield, like I said, playing against Tennessee might have the best game.
Yeah.
But all three of them just looked basic.
I mean, Derek Carr was super conservative. I watched that game. They beat the Broncos through and through. Broncos had no business even being in that game, to be real.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a lot of conservative throws. You know, they didn't really let Carr throw more than, you know, 7 yards down the field. And then just a lot of just run game to kind of chew up clock and stuff, just move the chains. But going back to Dak, if I were Dak, and I say this jokingly, but I would hold out right now. I just had the game of my career. I'm going to hold out. Jerry, you got to pay me.
I've never seen that before.
Like, I just had one of the best games of my career. You have to pay me. Like, I just gave you my best performance. Do you want to see more of this?
It's too late.
Secure the bag.
It's too late.
I think that would be messed up to his teammates.
Yeah. So, it's messed up to your teammates to do it, period.
Right.
Like, if you're the starting quarterback, running back, safety, and you just sit out of all training camp and off season, like, we need you to be here so we can prepare.
Yeah.
You've prepared with me, and now I'm showing you this is what you look like with me. Now pay me to keep me. That's genius.
Yeah, because I mean,
that's far more better than I'm just not going to be here off season because you're giving someone else the time to prepare for you not being there. Like, okay, this running back is not going to be here, so let's bring in Alfred Morris and let's see what he look like. This wide receiver ain't going to be here. Let's bring in such and such. All right, next man up.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see how you bring that next man up in a week.
Yeah, because I mean, it's dumb, but it's smart at the same time, because right now, especially when, you know, Cowboys fans are euphoric. They're loving this right now. Dak just, oh, Dak's going to do this all season. Dak's going to win MVP. How do you think Jerry Jones is feeling right
slow
now?
Down.
Let's be real. You know a lot of fans are jumping to conclusions like Zion from the free throw line.
Yeah.
You know that. That's just how it goes with Dallas in general.
But Zion actually did it.
Zion didn't jump from the free throw line?
Well, this season isn't over yet, so you can't say Dak didn't.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm just saying the fact that people are now looking and overreacting and saying, like, whether it's overreaction or not, they're like, yo, Dallas, no, you might really have to watch Dallas. They're going to be playing in the Super Bowl.
Right, because their projections from the offseason, from last year.
Right.
Oh, look at the – they really might just have the best linebacker core in the NFL.
I think they do.
I'm saying you give
between
that –
between those three? Oh, yeah.
You give – is his last name? The corner.
Talking about Byron Jones?
Yes, yeah. Jones. You give Jones another year at corner because I know he transitioned from safety. You know, Ezekiel Elliott's there. You give Amari Cooper a full offseason with Dak and a full season with Dak after looking at what they did the last whatever amount of games he was there. So, yes, Dallas, this is the best team that Dallas has had in a while.
Yeah.
So, if I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan, I'm very optimistic about our chances to compete and play and possibly win a championship this year. So if that star quarterback who just had an amazing game week one,
just
you
cut
heard
them off.
I'm saying at the beginning of the show, Sakani, you were happy about how they beat the Giants.
Right.
You think of somebody who's like even more like you're a true fanatic, like you probably got a Dallas Cowboy tattoo on your forehead or something. You really might be looking at it like that.
Someone just got a Lombardi trophy tattoo with Cowboy Star. Someone's getting inked right now. I guarantee.
For 2020.
I guess he think he's Jason Terry.
Yeah, right.
With the Dallas Mavericks, but he's not remembering that he also did that with the Celtics.
Yeah.
For like 11 or 12, and they lost that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so I could definitely understand that. And if Dak was to come out, he should have came out the next day after that game and said that if he was going to do it. But no, that would have been genius.
Yeah.
Because that gives you a very short window. We've been working on this all off season.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got 4 or 5 days. Get it done. Find the money. Get it done.
I think Jerry would fold. I think he would.
You Maybe. Have to.
I think he would.
Do you think that's like that might be something that's against the rules and contracts? Like
teams probably
signed
something.
Like put that in contracts to say that you can't decide to hold out mid-season.
I don't know. Like, how do you tell?
Because I feel like any player would do that after a big game. Then
I don't know.
Don't.
But it would give you. It would give you the possibility, the option to be able to do that.
Hey, we probably shouldn't be giving AB secrets away. He was going to do this his first game with New England.
But this is my thing. Like, how do you – so NFL teams that don't like their players sitting out during the offseason. I mean, you know, the OTAs, which are optional, that's one thing. Like, those are – you know those are not mandatory. But when you set up those – like, no, you have to be here. Like, no, that's me not sitting out. That's me not getting paid for being here because I'm going to risk that to get the big contract. If you could really write in somebody's contract that you can't just choose to not show up, I'm pretty sure they would put that in there, period, regardless of whether the first game has already started or whether we're preparing for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if anything, okay, you're just not going to get paid for this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you could really just, like, make him show up for this week's practice or for next week's game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, whether he can actually do it or not, I do think that even though, yes, it's just one game, it was against the Giants, still, Dak has even more leverage than he had 2 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Off of this performance alone.
Absolutely.
So, Jerry should go ahead and just pay up now. Don't try to wait it out because you're going to wait until we start playing some tough competition late in the season. And then you're going to try to use those games against me at the contract table. No, I need to get paid now. So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways for me. Dak needs to get paid. Although I personally wouldn't pay him that amount. If you're trying to win a Super Bowl, go ahead and pay him. Another big takeaway for me, we got to move on from Jameis Winston. Winston was so awful this game against the Niners. Like, He was exactly who he's been this whole entire time. We think about his greatness, you know, in college and stuff like that, winning the national championship. But his issues were always turnovers, interceptions, fumbles, mm-hmm. inopportune times. I feel like Jameis is the image of the black quarterback that people like to put out there. You know what I mean? When they talk about, well, see, black people shouldn't
this
be playing quarterback.
This is why we don't give you our chance.
Right. Like, they, that's who Jameis Winston is, and it's unfortunate.
But I feel like there's so many other black quarterbacks who are like, all right, there are reasons why you can sign a black quarterback.
Yeah, but you know, all they need is one excuse.
Right, just like how they're going to do with Antonio Brown. See, we can't give them these fully guaranteed contracts because they start acting a fool when they get guaranteed money.
Yeah.
You know, they're just looking for one. So, and they got Jameis, so they're good. Now let's go draft some, you know, QB from Boise State and go throw $80 million at him, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
instead of Jameis.
There's no telling the next time we'll see a black franchise quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I was just thinking that. I wonder, right. I would have to kind of go back in history and like, okay, let's look at the last black quarterback with a franchise that didn't succeed. Have they drafted a black quarterback since?
Since.
The Raiders, you know, with Jamarcus Russell.
Haven't had a black one
since. You don't think they would go for Jalen Hurts if he was available this offseason?
The Raiders?
Hurts? No.
Yeah. Not the Raiders. The Tampa Bay.
I don't think he's going to be I don't think anybody is really looking at him like a franchise NFL quarterback.
Yeah, everyone right now is tanking for Tua. Just like the Dolphins are, tanking for Tua.
For sure. Yeah. But what I'm saying is they're not going to be able to – I don't think the Bucks are going to be that bad to where they're like number – they get the top three pick. But I feel like should they have like the number 8 pick or something like that?
Yeah,
that's someplace that I could see Jalen going. I don't see him going top 5 right now, but you know, mm-hmm. is that a possibility? If he's on the board, do you pass him up?
It depends who else is there.
Yeah, I think who else is there and schemes and everything come into play too. You know, quarterback is so different than other positions because, you know, if you don't fit their scheme, you know, they'll pass on you. They don't even think twice about you. It has nothing to do with your talent. It's just. It doesn't really play how we play, so we're cool.
So that's what I'm saying. So if Jalen, if we're talking about black quarterbacks, taking mm-hmm. a black quarterback, regardless of like the scheme, do you feel like he's someone that
Tampa? No.
I don't think
not yet. And I guess maybe projections and everything will come out later down the road, and we'll kind of see where NFL experts and scouts are thinking that he'll land, you know, as far as his draft value. I could see someone taking a flyer on him in the later rounds, like not even later rounds, I mean like 2, 3, 4. But as a first round pick, I think there are going to be a lot of teams that kind of back off and say, well, he's only doing it 1 year. They're going to attribute it to Lincoln Riley and his success with quarterbacks more so than they're going to say, yo, Jalen Hurts did
that. But it's not like he didn't ball at Alabama.
But then he also didn't throw the ball. He didn't really throw the ball well in Alabama, and they're going to hold that against him.
Honestly, I would say no for Tampa simply because I don't feel like Tampa is a team that you look at and you say, we have everything but that quarterback we could fill in, so let's just take a chance on the best quarterback available when we draft. That's why I say it really depends on who's available. I think you go for
okay.
If you know you have a need at lineman, and you have a great prospect
lineman
available,
yeah.
you take him over. Let's just get Jalen Hurts so we can get Jameis Winston out of here because you can bring in literally any quarterback to get Jameis Winston out of there, and you don't have to do that with a high draft pick. If Jalen Hurts turns out to be one, when you know you need, you know, somebody to compliment Mike Evans, or you still want to find a great running back to balance out your offense, or you need, you know, somebody at safety, a pass rusher, you know, if you know you have holes somewhere else, I think you try to attack that if there's a great prospect that high versus, Jalen Hurts is a guy that's going to make up for it.
Right. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. Only other two takeaways, and I guess before we move forward, the Packers. If the Packers play defense like they did against the Bears on Thursday night, they're going to be something to be reckoned with. I know their offense didn't play very well, new offensive scheme and all that, But the way the defense played, I haven't seen their defense fly around like that since pretty much 2011 when they won the Super Bowl.
Right.
So if they can keep that up with, you know, the young guns that they got back there in that secondary, they're going to be a problem for the NFC. Probably the last biggest takeaway I have from the first week of the season, if they can keep Deshaun Watson upright, they're going to be special for the next 10 years. Deshaun Watson can at one point be the best quarterback in the league. I really believe that. And I hope it turns out that way as well. You know, a lot of people slept on him. He probably should have been the first quarterback picked in that draft. I know Patrick Mahomes was in that draft. Mitchell Trubisky went number 2 overall.
Trash.
But yeah.
Right. That's another reason why I'm not too surprised by the Green Bay defense, honestly. So when you have first year film, you notice most quarterbacks after their first full season of starting have a decline the following year. And that's because a lot more defenses have been able to scheme and throw different looks at them. And I think the Chicago offense wasn't great enough last year. I think their defense is really what carried them into the playoffs in order for them to get to where they were at. So I don't know if it's really the Green Bay defense being that great yet, but
yeah,
I will say that was a good win for their defense as far as the way that they showed up.
Yeah, anytime you can limit a professional football team to 3 points, and that is kind of me throwing shade in my own team for how they performed in the Super Bowl last year. But yes, anytime you can keep a professional NFL offense to only 3 points for a game, you did well. Regardless of who playing at quarterback, is a professional quarterback. Like, anybody could have been there. For some reason, they put that person. And yeah, they did good enough. But I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, can you do that against a quarterback better, who can read the defense, who's not as inexperienced, who you're not able to, you know, simply take as much advantage of. So no, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. But overall, week one was good, in my opinion. I'm excited for the season.
It was. I'm definitely excited for the season. All right, so let's move forward. Dreaded topic, FIBA World Cup. Our men's national team. Boy, I don't even want to go down the games that they've won and the games that they lost, because ultimately I don't even think it matters at this point. We all know Team USA, you're talking about, you know, usually the best players in the NBA. We all knew that there were a lot of players that declined invitations and, you know, dropped out and all that stuff. But still, nonetheless, you're talking about a team that has guys like Kemba Walker, Donovan Mitchell, Jaylen Brown. You've got Miles Turner, Harrison Barnes, and we can't finish better than 7th place in the FIBA World Cup. There are 7 countries from top to bottom that have better teams than we do. I understand there are stars. We don't have the best. There have been multiple games where we haven't had the best player on the court. You know, when we played against Serbia, they got Nikola Jokic. You know, I understand that. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about playing against Greece, they got Giannis. I get that. We talked about, you know, several episodes back, it was basically the international NBA awards. It was all international players that won those awards. So we get that. But still, nonetheless, you know, you got one of the greatest coaches in Popovich of all time, you know, any level. I don't see how they can't pull it together.
Just because you mentioned his name, I have to ask,
it's his fault.
Are we not fairly criticizing Greg Popovich for the performance that we've been seeing? Because we have been seeing, I mean, at the end of the day, it's really just a team of notable names. I'm not familiar with 9 out of 10 Serbian basketball players, Greek basketball players, Australian basketball players, you know, whatever. So I don't know the other players. I know everybody on the USA team. That doesn't automatically mean that they're more talented.
Right.
But when you look at the fact that all these players are in the NBA, and you say that the NBA is a compilation of the greatest NBA talents in the world, because you do have people like Giannis from Greece and, you know, whoever else from whatever country playing. And you see these names, like, are they just not as talented? Are they not executing the system put in place? Is Greg Popovich not coaching them well enough? Like, what is it? I don't know. But the fact that nobody's talking about Greg Popovich, is that fair to the players?
I don't think it is. And I'm not, honestly, he's, you know, my home team's coach, and I get that. But I don't know what kind of, you know, recipe that, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, but he obviously had a different level of rapport. Maybe that was because you had a lot of guys that were playing multiple years with Team USA. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys, this is their first year. They never even played international ball before. So I understand it's new. So I think some of it does have to fall on coaching. You got to be able to get those guys prepared and put them in positions to be successful. Because even though Team USA was winning some of those games, some of those games were fairly low scoring. We're used to Team USA having, you know, at least 100 points in every game and, you know, holding the other team to 70 or 75. But they had multiple games where they were below, you know, 80 points. I think even though they beat Greece, they only scored like 69 points, something along those lines.
Yeah, it was like I want to say it was like 79, 69 or something.
Right,
something
it was a very low scoring game.
I'm actually check that.
I want to say like 69, 53, maybe something along the lines of that.
Because now that you're saying, I think it was like 60, 50, like
yeah.
Somewhere around.
Yeah, because remember they held Giannis to 15 points.
Yeah, it was 69 to 53.
69, 53, gotcha. But even just, you know, kind of games like that, it's just, you could kind of tell as they were surviving games, they survived Turkey. You know, yes, they beat Greece, but wasn't super impressive. Maybe on the defensive end it was. But you just kind of got a feeling like eventually they're going to fold. And then, you know, a loss here and then a loss there and then a loss there. And then you say, hey, they can't finish better than seventh place. That's insane. I mean, I think this probably was one of the least talented NBA rosters that we've sent overseas to participate in any, you know, international play. But still, nonetheless, from top to bottom, we're not that bad.
Why do we have to have the best players in the NBA just to compete? Does that speak right to the level of talent in the NBA?
You know, I think some of it does. And I think especially as, you know, the ages of the players get younger and younger on these rosters, I think that you can attribute some of this to, you know, the AAU game and things like that coming up, mm-hmm. because they don't teach fundamentals like that. They really don't. You know, who has footwork, you know, who has at 24 or 25 years old, who has the footwork or the drive that like a Kobe had, that a LeBron had, that Jordan had, just that fine attention to detail of the fundamentals to do everything that they want to do, but still be super effective. That's why we have so many young players that are just so inefficient. They can get shots up. They can hit some tough shots, but they're probably going to miss the first 10. You know, like I like Donovan Mitchell, but he's inefficient.
Right.
So then that's probably going to be his Achilles heel for a long time. I think that's kind of that AAU age where it's like, nah, you could hoop, you know, do whatever you're going to do.
But you can't play basketball.
But you can't play basketball. You don't understand the game of basketball, you know, in the head. And I think that's where a lot of the international players, they've always had the basketball IQ. They just didn't have the physical talent, mm-hmm. you know, to get there. And I think they're starting to catch up now, and we get things like this. So not to say that, hey, if we get the best players in the league, we get James Harden, we get Steph Curry, KD, we're going to go back to blowing them out, you know. But still, there's no reason that they should even be in the ballpark with them right. still.
Because, I mean, because now you're talking about older, talented elite players that do have those fundamentals.
Right, exactly.
And that's why you see a lot of these young dudes, oh, let me work with Kobe, let me work with LeBron, you know, Magic, Kareem, yeah. whoever. And it's not simply because they are who they are. It's not what you know. Mm-hmm. It's because I was taught differently than you.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you work with a Hakeem and you learn that footwork, kind of like mm-hmm. what you're talking about. It's just certain things that you were taught at an older age because you wanted to focus on. And you know, I was actually speaking to one of my friends, same one, Terrell. I was speaking mm-hmm. to Beast about this when we was playing basketball.
Yeah.
I was like, a lot of people just don't understand that a lot of this really just does come down. It's a mental battle. If I'm standing in front of you with the basketball and you're defending me and I got the ball in my left hand and I cross over to the right. What are you doing? He said, I'm defending your right. I said, exactly. Now it's on me to be intellectual enough to know that once I have you going right, I can cross back in between my legs and go left.
You've just shifted your body weight. You've exactly. adjusted your feet position. And
now
all that stuff.
You being a defender, if you're smart enough, you fast enough, you catch up to my left hand. Now what do? I go behind the back to the right. If you catch that, I go right behind the back again to the left. Now I'm spinning going right and I've lost you and I'm driving or I'm pulling up for a mid-range because the defender is, you know, still sinking back. You know, whatever it is, it's all intellectual. Mm-hmm. Everybody is not taught the game the same way. And we were just speaking about it and I broke it down. I was like, honestly, that's one of the things that separates me from other players on the basketball court. I know these things now, but I wasn't taught these things at a young age like a lot of y'all was because I didn't play organized basketball.
Right.
And although I know it now, I wasn't really taught how to do it. So it's not as natural. It's not as smooth. So a lot of these kids, they just know the rules of basketball. You can jump. You can put the ball in the hole. But what's the biggest thing we talk about with a lot of these kids? You don't know how to play defense because you don't know how to read somebody else's offensive moves. They have great defensive potential because you tall and you long.
Quick.
Right, but you don't know how to put those pieces together and stay in front of somebody. You don't know, you know, how to create separation and get an efficient shot up.
Andrew Wiggins.
Exactly. So, a lot of this really is just, it does come down to intellect. And a lot of these younger kids, and we're seeing it now on this roster, a lot of these younger kids just don't really know how to play basketball.
Yeah.
And
also,
it's a bad representation.
Have we always had teams this young?
No,
I feel like
this is
a very young team.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when I think about after seeing this performance, I wondered, what's our USA team going to look like? But then I thought, okay, they're probably going to be a bit more high-profile players who show up for the Olympics, like, you know, AD, Westbrook, Curry. I mean, this is next year, next summer. So I'm hoping we'll have a stronger team next year, and maybe the standout guys from this class might be able to have an opportunity. But I wonder... I hope this isn't the same team that we have come Olympic season.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Oh hell
not.
No.
Yeah, it can't be. But I heard something on the jump earlier today, I kind of found it an astounding point was that the rest of the world cares so much about the FIBA World Cup, like that is it. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the U.S. has it backwards, and we put all of our stock into the Olympics. So other teams don't really care about the Olympics, or other nations don't really care about the Olympics that much when it comes to basketball. And yeah, and that's shocking. You would think that, hey, that's the biggest stage.
Yeah.
But for them, it's like, nah, it's the FIBA World Cup is everything for them. So to beat the U.S. here, that means a lot to those nations. So, I mean, I think we understand, especially with them moving the FIBA World Cup because it's usually 2 years before the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Most players don't want to commit, you know, back-to-back summers. Especially, you see, this is going on in September right now. The season's about to start next month.
Right.
So I know why a lot of players don't want to commit to, you know, doing both of them. It's one or the other. And for us, we value the Olympics so much. But they got to do something. They got to do something because this isn't it. Go get the best college basketball players at this rate.
Yeah, if you're going to do this.
Yeah, I mean, because you don't really see them televised.
Give them some international experience.
Right, because you don't, and a lot of them usually do have the international experience.
Just don't take a ball, brother.
Right. Because there are a lot of like under 18, under 17 teams that play international.
Melo might be
already.
Nice, though.
I
was just making a joke because, you know, of course, LiAngelo's stealing.
Yeah,
but I like LaMelo Ball. I think LaMelo is going to be a top 10 pick. And I think LaMelo as a 6'7 point guard is going to be cool. He's actually going to be
the best ball brother, I think.
I don't think he's going to be as good of a defender, but I definitely think he's going to average more points. His assisting rebounds might be a little lower, but I think everything is going to average out. And he is going to be viewed as the best one.
which is.
But they've been saying that for a while.
They have been, but I wasn't believing it because back then when he was like 15, he scored like, you know, 70, almost 100 points.
Yeah,
but
he scored like 91.
But he was cherry picking.
Yeah.
I wasn't concerned about that. I was like 92.
That's what his father said too, though.
Yeah. No, so he's a genius now.
And that's also actually what Richard Williams, the Williams sisters' father, said as well about Serena. Y'all think Venus is nice, but wait till you see Serena.
Right. I mean, another perfect segue into tennis. We got the U.S. Open that wrapped up. I got to watch a few matches. I wish I would have seen more of the primetime matchups, though. Seeing like Osaka against Coco Gauff. I wish I would have been able to watch that. It sounded like it was one for the ages. Although, you know, Osaka clearly handled Coco. That's like the future of tennis. So that's the future of tennis. And just to see, you know, two black tennis players, you know, exuding excellence on the highest stage at the ages that they are, you know, both very young, especially Coco being only 15 years old. It's really cool to see. I definitely appreciate that.
It took long enough. Yeah. Like, honestly, you look at Venus, you look at Serena, you look at them in their 30s, how long they've been dominating, I would have expected for this wave of black tennis, of female black tennis players to come along a little sooner. Mm-hmm. I feel like it took a while, but it's nice to see.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to.
It's not even female tennis. Black tennis, bro. But the thing is, it's black tennis because there are no male black tennis doing anything. So as far as black tennis representation, it's just them.
Well, I mean,
there are no.
I would honestly be shocked if Serena or Venus has influenced a male. Like, that's just like me personally being a black male. I've never been influenced by either one of them to let me go play tennis.
Right.
But if I'm a female, you know, I would look at them the same way that I look at like Ray Allen, Chris Paul. Chris Paul, Chris Webber, Allen Iverson, Ray Lewis. Like, these are the guys that I looked at that made me want to play these sports. So if I'm a girl.
But also, there were no women for you to really look up to in really those sports at that time.
Wait, in what sports? Tennis?
In football or basketball.
Well, I mean, well, definitely not football, but. I mean, I don't want to get back into the girl basketball thing, but it's
women just don't influence me
to want to, like, I've never wanted to do something because I saw a woman do it. Like, let me.
I hear you.
Like, this woman is such a great writer. Let me write a poem. I've just never done that.
What I'm saying is, like, there are no other black tennis players for a young black kid to be watching. So if there's anybody, as far as just black tennis players in general, who I'm going to watch, it's going to be Venus and Serena. And now you have this new age of young kids who, if they were going to, like, to be real, black kids, I don't care who you are, those are the people who you're watching growing up. Like, yeah, Roger Federer was doing what he was doing, but I wasn't really checking for Roger. All I checked for was Serena. And I think that's what it's going to be for most young black boys as well growing up. It's like, yeah, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal and Djokovic, they've all been dominating for as long as they have. But if there's anybody who's been dominating even longer and is considered the greatest of all time when it comes to tennis, it's Serena. And yeah, that's who you're going to.
If Roger Federer was black,
then you would know who he is as a young black kid.
But not 100%. Only that, not only that, I might be a little more interested in tennis.
But what I'm saying is, if you like tennis, just as a kid, if you like tennis, you're going to look up to them. Just as another player who looks like you.
And having them influence me to want to do what they do. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not understanding why more black girls, more older black girls, like you said, Coco 15, the 20, the 25-year-olds, like...
Yeah.
You got Sloane Stephens.
No, but
as well.
I'm saying just like more.
But you know, I think a lot of it comes back to lack of resources. It's the same thing that goes on in baseball.
Yeah.
We do have some black representation in baseball, but not nearly as much as you do basketball, football. Mm-hmm. Every school you go to has basketball, football. Not everyone has baseball. Not everyone has tennis. You know, most people that play tennis typically have, you know, some trainer, you know, coming up with them as well, get private lessons, all that stuff. That ain't happening in the inner city. So I mean, that's part of it as well.
No, that's true.
You know, so I think you kind of can make those parallels to baseball because, yeah, we have all these baseball diamonds around Fresno, but they're empty. Yeah. You know, who has the equipment?
And what kids have equipment?
Yeah, who has a baseball bat? Most, you know, we use baseball bat as weapons, not as, you know, actual
No, I remember baseball. I played baseball once. Mm-hmm. Like, baseball, I remember baseball being, like, I remember Cameron played baseball when we were kids, and I wanted to, but I was too young. And then I remember I played in the seventh grade, but then my mom and my teacher told me to stop because I need to focus on my schoolwork because I was, like, falling behind. So I stopped. And that whole team was nothing but black kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to Carver.
Oh, it was hardball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was... It was nothing but niggas on that team. Like, that that was fun. Uh-huh. But after that, I don't know, I just never wanted to play after
It's
that.
One of those things, it's hard to just stick to, because especially for us as black people, or black kids, we get used to all the high-action ones. The sports that we watch are the high-action ones.
It was kind of slow.
Exactly.
You know, you're sitting there, you're waiting.
I can't stand in center field and go catch one ball. Like, I played softball, you know, going up at Air. You know, I did play softball, too.
I forgot.
Yeah, we only had softball, not baseball. It got boring. I played center field. I made a couple plays in the game.
I played second base.
And you get maybe,
second and first.
And you get maybe two at-bats. Like, bro, no, I'm trying to play.
Yeah, and then they had our own guy pitching us the ball. You get two pitches.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
Yeah, but it's like, no, I'm trying to, like, play. I need to be, like,
but when you're in center field,
influence.
There is other action, though.
You know, butterflies, birds.
Nah, what I'm saying, like, you got to back up infield plays.
Yeah.
Like, there is stuff that you are doing. You're not just, like, standing there the entire time.
But at that point, our baseball IQs just weren't high. You know what I mean? We're kids, so it's like,
gotcha.
The ball has to come to me, or else it's not for me. You know what I mean?
I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. So my baseball IQ as a child was not the way that it is now. I have a better understanding of, hey, yes, there are nine people in the field at all times, and they have roles to play even when the ball doesn't come to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the U.S. Open, it sucks to see Serena lost in the final in straight sets. I know she's trying to tie this Grand Slam record, and she just can't quite get there. I think she's going to get it at some point. I don't know when. She's going to break through. She's going to tie it. She's going to break it. I think it's really just a matter of time. But, you know, when you start to get in those droughts like that, do you think that ever gets in her head, or do you think that she just, you know, lets it be and, you know, doesn't even worry about it?
I think it gets in her head. I feel like at some point when you are that great, when you are associated with other people that are that great, and you've accomplished so much and you can just see it right there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure it still bothers Tiger. Like, when you look at that span that he had where he wasn't winning,
right.
You know, after the
Not
whole
the
thing.
Masters, yeah.
Right, you know, the whole thing with his wife, you know, you feel like, all right, I've been winning this much in this time span, and you go, I don't know how many, about 4 or 5 years where you just don't win anything, maybe longer. That was just sad to see. So yeah, I'm pretty sure for Serena to know that she was that close,
mm-hmm.
that honestly might have been a reason why she lost, because she still looks like she's in great physical shape. You know, to get there shows that you can still do it,
mm-hmm.
but you just put so much pressure on yourself because you know, if I get this, then I tie, and if I get one more, then I'm in the lead. Like,
right.
Sometimes I can throw people off.
Yeah, yeah.
Agreeing with Carl, I feel like it has become a mental thing for Serena being in that final match, her past four Open Finals, because or Grand Slam finals, because she's getting there. She's making it to the finals to be able to get to this point. So it's clear that her skill level hasn't dropped at any point. But when it comes to her playing in these matches, I want to say the last three, she got smacked.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I didn't expect her to lose in straight sets. I never thought that was gonna
exactly.
Happen. Yeah.
And Osaka whooped her ass at the U.S. Open last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the officiating was bad, but also Osaka was handling her like she was not backing down at all. So I will say, Serena, when it comes to these finals matches, it just seems like there's something there, some sort of mental hurdle that is getting in the way of her game.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason why she couldn't. Well, maybe there is a reason, but as far as her game up into the finals, there's no reason why she should have struggled the way she has in the finals.
yeah,
the way she has.
right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a matter of time, like I said, that she'll eventually break it. But she's got some, I don't know, I guess, final round demons that she needs to address. But when she breaks it, we'll definitely give her a shout out when it's time.
For sure.
So, yeah, that's going to wrap up another episode of Fan Culture. You guys know the deal. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram. Check us out, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. Y'all got anything else to add?
That's a wrap.
It's a wrap. All right. Well, till next time, y'all.
Dallas Cowboys and Patriots Super Bowl.
All this trash at the end. Y'all just talking now. All right. Well, till next time, y'all. Peace.
Peace.